Welcome to this week's episode of Phoenix Magazine here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Casey Sheehan. This week, we're going to take a look at the top docks here in the Valley for 2024. We're going to hear a little bit about what inspired them to become doctors, what they love best about the job, and a little bit about what they do in their free time. So let's get to it. Meet the top doctors of 2022 by the editorial staff. March 7th, 2022. It's time to think about going to the doctor again. Our annual peer-selected list of the Valley's most respected healers has more currency than ever. Brian W. Hardaway, MD. Cardiovascular disease. Med school, year graduated. University of Tennessee at Memphis, 2002. Years in practice, 12. How often do you get to meet the families of the heart donor and the heart recipient? What is that experience like? It's very rare for members of the heart transplant team to meet the donor family. However, it's not uncommon for the recipient and donor family to connect usually about 1 year after the transplantation. The very few times I've met the donor family, I was introduced to them by the recipient. We read that you're a transplant cardiologist, a transplant recipient, and a transplant donor. Wow! How have these first-hand experiences informed your practice? Do you share your stories with patients? It really is a unique experience. I often get an opportunity to meet with patients undergoing kidney transplant evaluation, and frequently, I'm able to draw on my own personal experience of being a kidney donor to connect with them. I don't make it a routine to share my story, but if the situation calls for it, and I feel the patient and his or her family could benefit, I'll share with them. Last year, you won a teaching award for cardiology and congestive heart failure. What are the obstacles and rewards of teaching newer generations of physicians? That was a tremendous honor. The major obstacle is learning how each individual learner best processes the information you are attempting to teach and being able to adapt to that particular learning style. The reward is seeing a medical student, resident, or fellow successfully and independently apply what they've learned directly towards the care of a patient. How long do you think it will be before most heart replacement procedures utilize artificial or genetically manufactured hearts, as opposed to donor human hearts? I think we're in the dawn of a new era in cardiac transplantation. Just a few weeks ago, the world witnessed the first transplantation of a genetically modified pig heart into an adult human. More investigational work needs to be done, but there is a lot of excitement, as well as cautious optimism, about the future of this technology. There are lots of patients who unfortunately die waiting for a donor heart, and if successful, this would significantly decrease the death rates of patients waiting on the heart transplant list. You're a proud Michigander. What do you miss most about the Mitten? Family, for sure. Sunday dinner at my grandparents' house. I also miss the fall and everything that comes along with it. The beautiful colors of the leaves, trips to the apple orchard, apple cider and donuts, and last but not least, University of Michigan football. Go Blue! Name the best depiction of your field in TV or film that you've ever seen. This is a trick question. There hasn't been one that accurately captures the inner workings of a transplant team. I find the best depictions come from patients themselves, telling their own stories on social media sites or in conjunction with their respective transplant center. You work with the local nonprofit Elevate MED. Tell us about that. It's an organization which promotes efforts to prioritize physician workforce diversity and cultural competence via mentorship, along with scholarships to medical students from underrepresented communities. What are your hobbies and interests outside of medicine? Riding my Peloton with a group of friends from Mayo, collectively known as the Cardiac Outputs, and listening to old-school funk, R&B, and hip-hop. What are you watching on Netflix these days? Ozark and The Harder They Fall. If I wasn't a doctor, I'd be a financial planner. Helen Chang Hall, MD. Colon and Rectal Surgery. Med school, year graduated. Medical College of Wisconsin, 2008. Years in practice, 6. What are some preventative measures people can take to maintain colorectal health? Colonoscopies. They could be diagnostic and therapeutic, but I prefer them to be preventative. Removing polyps before they have a chance to turn into cancer is key. Are there other preventative tools for patients, or are colonoscopies just about it? Colonoscopies are the gold standard of care. However, for people who are not high risk, there are stool sample studies available. Who or what inspired you to enter this field? Dr. Pello, my attending during training. He told me one reason he likes this field is that there's never been a colorectal surgeon he didn't like. He is a good surgeon, a good man, and someone I strive to be like. Where bedside manner is concerned, a bit of levity has been known to ease the awkwardness of rectal examinations and colonoscopies. Do you have any zingers in your arsenal? You can't be in this field without knowing all sorts of sometimes slightly inappropriate jokes about the bottom side. What did Obi-Wan say to the colorectal surgeon? Answer? These aren't the roids you're looking for. Or, did you hear the one about the golfer who started a colonoscopy clinic? He does 18 holes a day. What are the most common surgeries you perform? Have any been trending upward or downward? Colon resection surgeries, of course. There does appear to be an increase in colorectal cancers, particularly in younger patients, which is why the age recommended for colonoscopies has decreased from 50 to 45, possibly earlier if there's any family history. Please get screened. Name the best depiction of your field in TV or film that you've ever seen. I'm not sure my field has been on TV or film. Seinfeld had an episode involving a certain proctologist and a certain ass man license plate. Numerous people in the field have tried and failed to obtain such a license plate. What are your hobbies and interests outside of medicine? Anything and everything that involves the great outdoors. Hiking with my dogs, rock climbing, paddle boarding, kayaking, scuba diving, camping, jeeping, exploring. If I wasn't a doctor, I'd be maybe a veterinarian. I love animals. Brett Segrist, MD. Vascular surgery. Med school, year graduated. Georgetown University, 1997. Years in practice, 19. After serving as a U.S. Navy surgeon on the USS Nassau in the Persian Gulf, are you unfazed by the challenging surgeries on dry land? Not really, but on the Nassau, we did have to bolt the equipment down to prevent things from rolling around. My Navy service has given me a deep appreciation for the sacrifices made by military members and their families. Can you explain the differences between traditional vascular surgery and less invasive endovascular techniques? Traditional vascular surgery consists of bypassing or removing arterial blockages through one or more incisions. Endovascular techniques treat the same blockages, but with quicker recovery time using a variety of stents, balloons, and other devices through a small puncture site. Why is it important that surgeons such as yourself get specifically board certified in vascular surgery before performing in this field? It means we're trained in both traditional vascular surgery and less invasive endovascular techniques. Vascular patients deserve an unbiased treatment plan, not limited to a particular skill set. Board certified vascular surgeons remain the only specialty able to offer the full array of options to patients with vascular disease. What are some of the causes of stroke? How are vascular surgeons involved in their treatment? Blockages in the carotid artery account for up to 20% of strokes. Vascular surgeons treat these blockages by removing them, a procedure called endarterectomy, or by placing stents in the artery through a small incision or puncture site. You trained in New Orleans. What do you miss the most about the Big Easy? I grew up there, so going back always feels like home. I love the food and the people. Everything there seems to run at a nice, slow, friendly pace. What kind of hobbies and interests do you have outside of medicine? I enjoy reading, playing golf, and traveling. I like to spend quality time with my family whenever I can. Name the best depiction of your field in TV or film that you've ever seen. Every medical student should watch The Doctor with William Hurt. There are some valuable lessons on humility and compassion that we could all incorporate into our practice. What are you watching on Netflix these days? We don't actually have Netflix, but my wife and I recently finished season 3 of Succession on HBO. If I wasn't a doctor, I'd be a high school chemistry teacher. Hakanwal Sachdev, MD. Anesthesiology, Med school, year graduated. University of California, San Francisco, 2006. Years in practice, 12. Patients are usually paired with their anesthesiologists through their surgeons. Is there any circumstance in which a patient hand selects an anesthesiologist? Oftentimes, patients will request us for repeat anesthetics after developing a relationship, and surgeons will request anesthesiologists they feel would be best for certain cases. I also frequently take care of inpatients who may have multiple anesthetics during their hospitalization and were able to develop a more meaningful relationship. Do you ever meet with patients on a clinical one-on-one basis? I often call patients or do evaluations before surgeries to discuss the anesthetic and any concerns a patient may have. And, of course, we meet every patient the day of their procedure before they receive anesthesia and discuss their care. Have any of your patients recounted spiritual, hallucinatory, or otherwise fantastical experiences they had while under anesthesia? I often have patients tell me about very interesting things they remember right before they go under. Mostly people say really interesting things as they are emerging from anesthesia. And not all safe for print. Thankfully, I haven't had anyone recall surgery while under general anesthesia. Do patients often express anxiety about going under? How do you calm their nerves? Yes, almost everyone is anxious before undergoing anesthesia. I tell every patient that a degree of anxiety is a normal and healthy response to having a procedure with anesthesia. I reassure my patients that my sole focus is to be with them and do my absolute best to ensure a safe anesthetic. What, in your opinion, has been the most significant development or change in the field of anesthesiology over the last 20 years? The technology for our anesthesia machines has really evolved and allows us to take care of very critical patients. Over the last 20 years, these machines have been capable of doing so much more than when I was training. It's quite impressive to see. You graduated from UC San Francisco. What do you miss most about the Bay Area? The diversity of the Bay Area. It's such a melting pot of cultures, blessed with a variety of people, food, and traditions. It's really an exciting and fun place to be. I really miss exploring all the different things the area has to offer. Name the best depiction of your field in TV or film that you've ever seen. It's funny because I find most depictions of medicine to be fairly inaccurate. Anesthesia usually doesn't get a very realistic depiction. It's a mysterious field, and the most representations seem a little off. My favorite medical show of all time is ER, though. I still watch reruns of that show. What are your hobbies and interests outside of medicine? As a native of Arizona, I'm a diehard Suns and Cardinals fan. I even make my kids watch the games with me. Still waiting on one of our teams breaking through to win it all. What are you watching on Netflix these days? I'm currently watching the latest season of Ozark. My wife and I are also watching Ted Lasso together. If I wasn't a doctor, I'd be in real estate. I'm passionate about houses in the real estate market. I love seeing things built from scratch, so maybe I'd be a developer. You're listening to Phoenix Magazine on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Casey Sheehan. Jimmy Sade, MD. Diagnostic Radiology. Med school, year graduated. University of Arizona, 2005. Years in practice, 8. Did learning how to read scans and x-rays come naturally to you? Or was there a learning curve? Is it something some medical students struggle with? Image interpretation did come easily to me, because I was an emergency physician first and have extensive clinical experience. Students can struggle with image analysis, but radiology residencies range from 5 to 7 years of training, and we do a good job teaching. What's the most unusual thing you've seen on a scan? There are numerous unusual things I've seen as an emergency physician and a radiologist. The most memorable are the bizarre injuries professional athletes get from distorting their bodies to reach peak performance, which very few people are able to do. Has radiology technology remained consistent over the last 2 decades, or have there been exciting leaps forward? Radiology has always been at the leading edge of technology. The past few years, I have seen marked leaps forward in the use of artificial intelligence. As a medical journal reviewer, I get the benefit of peeking into the future. Do you ever consult with patients directly on the results of their scans and x-rays, or is that info usually conveyed through their referring doctors? My practice is unique in that a third of my time is spent performing procedures and direct patient care. I greatly enjoy direct patient care, and I get to apply my emergency medicine skills as a radiologist. You specialize in musculoskeletal imaging and teach it at Creighton University. What is one medical principle you wish to instill in your students? The most important principle is that patients come first. Never forget, we are treating a human being and not just images on a screen. Additionally, when you realize your life is not about you, life becomes purposeful and meaningful. You went to ASU for undergrad and U of A for medical school. Does the sports rivalry register in your world? It's like being the sibling of two athletes. You root for both of them while enjoying the rivalry. Since I care for patients from all walks of life and athletes from a variety of professional teams, I stay impartial. What kind of hobbies and interests do you have outside of medicine? I've always enjoyed training my body and mind to the limit. As a teen, I was the Lebanese swimming champion in the 50-meter butterfly. I still practice a variety of sports, including mixed martial arts, weight training, and tennis. I enjoy reading about religion, philosophy, and leadership. What are you watching on Netflix these days? Predator versus Prey documentaries. The apex predators have incredible skills and abilities, but most of their attempts end in failure. With each failure, they grow hungrier and fiercer. Inevitably, they succeed and their triumph is glorious. If I wasn't a doctor, I would be a mystic philosopher, professional athlete, and stand-up comedian. I haven't ruled these out for this lifetime either. Christopher Luke Peterson, D.O. Addiction Medicine. Med school, year graduated. A.T. Still University at Kirksville. 2013. Years in practice? 5. Have you or your loved ones been affected by addiction? What inspired you to specialize in addiction medicine? No person in my immediate family has faced substance or alcohol use, thankfully. But during my early medical training, I noticed there was a general lack of knowledge on how to treat substance use orders, leading to many cases where it had significant impact on the health of our patients. When I finally saw a primary care doctor trained in addiction and the incredible change that patients displayed, it ultimately ignited the spark of my career. Your training is in family medicine. Other addiction specialists come up through psychiatry and internal medicine. How did these different root specialties affect treatment, if at all? Regardless of primary specialty, all addiction physicians are trained in the socio-psychobiology treatment of addiction. The nuances between specialties might lead an FM or IM doctor to do more family care in their cases, whereas a psychiatrist would be better equipped to manage more complex, co-occurring disorders. But you can't go wrong seeing any addiction physician, regardless of their primary specialty. Which other medical specialists and professionals do you work with to help your patients? Substance use disorders affect all organ systems. We collaborate regularly with primary care, surgical specialties, transplant, and obstetrics. I commonly tell our fellows and residents the most important tool in medicine is the telephone. Communication allows us to educate, coordinate, destigmatize, and advocate for appropriate care for the vulnerable population we serve. Do you believe the root causes of addiction are biological, societal, a combination, or something else? Addiction is a chronic, complex disorder of the brain's reward system and related neurocircuitry. About half of the risk to develop an addiction is genetic. Environment, psychological trauma, and societal determinants of health also play a role. This informs treatment, which can include longitudinal, biologic, social, or psychologic remedies. Motivational interviewing is an interest of yours. Can you explain what that is? Motivational interviewing is a communication style we use with people who are ambivalent about change, including persons with substance and alcohol use and substance use disorder. It is an active listening and guiding style of interviewing that acknowledges autonomy and evokes the patient's own desires to change, compared to the more traditional paternalistic doctor-patient relationship. You have 4 children. How will you discuss substance use and addiction with them as they age? Having a strong, open relationship with parents is one of the most influential things in a child's life and can be protective against using and misusing substances and alcohol. My spouse and I are direct and honest about the usage of medication and drugs, prescribed or not, and also with their effects and risks. We try to avoid fear-based discussion to avoid stigma. We use first-person lexicon. For instance, the person chooses to smoke instead of that smoker. we have discussed these things early and try to foster a relationship where they know they can come to us with questions without harsh judgment. It's too late by the time they reach 12, so talk to your kids early. Don't focus on fear-mongering and risks. Also, one talk will not be enough. Create a space where your kids can come to you for questions and teach them life skills, self-efficacy, stress reduction, drug resistance skills, and building personal responsibility. This is a longitudinal conversation, not a one-and-done talk. You love to hike and camp. Favorite spots in Arizona to enjoy the great outdoors? Sedona, Grand Canyon, Oak Creek Canyon. Name the best depiction of your field in TV or film that you've ever seen. The way addiction is portrayed in the media does more harm than good most of the time. Depictions of substance use disorder and treatment tend towards the extreme. Addiction and drug use is often glamorized without any consequence, or the character is seen as severely flawed. Portrayals of addiction treatment do not depict what actual evidence-based treatment is like, which perpetuates stigma and discrimination. When addiction on screen looks extreme, viewers with milder, albeit impactful, substance use disorders may not identify with having an addiction or that treatment is available and works. What are you watching on Netflix these days? I'm a fantasy and sci-fi nut, so I've been watching Star Trek Discovery, The Book of Boba Fett, and The Wheel of Time. If I wasn't a doctor, I'd be an ecologist. The interaction between animals and plants with the environment has always intrigued me, and it was my favorite undergraduate class. Todd Haddon, DPM. Podiatry. Med school, year graduated. Dr. William M. Scholl, College of Podiatric Medicine, 1998. Years in practice, 21. What's the most common surgical procedure you perform as a podiatrist? I do quite a bit of fracture care, fixing broken bones because people are increasingly active, leading to more injuries. I also treat chronic conditions and sports injuries such as Achilles tendonitis and plantar fasciitis. You go on annual medical missions to El Salvador. Can you talk a bit about those experiences? Since 2003, we have treated over 600 children in El Salvador, working with my partner, Dr. Todd Gunzi, who first introduced me to mission work in 2000. It's an amazing opportunity to give back and help children in underserved parts of the world. We treat pediatric deformities such as clubfoot that would remain untreated without our involvement. What are some traumatic injuries you've treated over the years? Any surprisingly common ones? Any jaw-dropping ones? We've seen it all, especially over the past few years during the pandemic with people working out at home. The most common traumatic injuries I see are probably sprained and broken ankles. People can slip awkwardly and have surprisingly bad breaks. I also had a patient once show up to the ER after his dog had eaten off two of his toes. That was probably the most bizarre one. What do you do to maintain your own foot and ankle health? I try to wear good socks and shoes along with foot orthotics. Not everyone needs them, but good support can go a long way. What kind of hobbies and interests do you have outside of medicine? My family and friends have called me a bit of a daredevil. I have been an avid snowboarder for 35 plus years and enjoy backcountry terrain as well as helicopter skiing. I also love the intersection of robotics and cars. I enjoy building radio control cars and even working on actual cars. What are you watching on Netflix these days? I am an avid viewer of all the streaming platforms and am an admitted nerd for science fiction and superhero content. I just finished the second season of The Witcher and Altered Carbon. I also grew up as a comic book enthusiast, and I am a diehard fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. If I wasn't a doctor, I'd be working in Silicon Valley, involved with product development or computer engineering at a place like Tesla. What a thrill it would be to invent and reimagine the future of automobiles. Andre Hagovic, MD. Neurology. Med school, year graduated. University of Missouri, Columbia, 1998. Years in practice, 18. Clinical neurophysiology is an interest of yours. Can you explain it in layperson's terms? It's the study of brain and nerve disorders by measuring bioelectric activity. It allows us to study and treat neurologic disorders such as epilepsy and nerve pain. How often are psychiatric disorders the result of neurological diseases, by your estimation? Psychiatric symptoms are commonly associated with neurodegenerative disorders and can be a major source of disability. Often, the psychiatric aspect of the disease can be treated more successfully than the underlying neurologic illness. What are the most pressing medical issues for your patients? I practice in Sun City West, where the population is older. Memory concerns are very prevalent and difficult to control. Poor balance and falls are also common and a source of injury. This can be reduced by educating patients on activities that may enhance strength, balance, and gait. How has working with a collaborative team at the CORE Institute informed your care approach? Many of my patients have several musculoskeletal issues. Working at CORE has allowed me to incorporate a team approach to treatment involving spine specialists, other orthopedic specialists, pain specialists, and physical therapists, among other fields. Besides being a healer, you're also a fourth-degree black belt kung fu instructor. It's an intriguing contradiction. Are the two passions, martial arts and neurological health, ever at odds? Not at all. Practicing kung fu and tai chi, when done mindfully, allows us to build a stronger and healthier body and mind, reduce stress, and ultimately provide for better quality of life. Tai chi has many proven health benefits, including better balance. I recommend it to many of my patients. One of our Phoenix staffers expressed admiration for your hair. Does someone local cut it? I get my hair cut from my great clips in Vistancia, where they do a great job. Name the best depiction of your field in TV or film that you've ever seen. The best depiction in film is Awakenings, based on Oliver Sacks' novel. A neurologist, played by Robin Williams, uses L-DOPA to awaken his catatonic patients. Memento is an entertaining thriller about a man who cannot form new memories. What are you watching on Netflix these days? Not much time for TV, but I am a big Star Wars fan and am currently enjoying The Book of Boba Fett, streaming on Disney+. If I wasn't a doctor, I'd be possibly a photographer. I greatly enjoy travel and landscape photography. I also love to explore astrophotography. Well, it looks like our time is up for this week's episode. As always, I've been your volunteer reader, Casey Sheehan. Be sure to stay tuned for more great programming right here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. See you next time.